Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from this fabulously little fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand. I was just thinking about how the work and taxation relationship works in this country. So it's like, there's three types of people. Those who work hard and don't have any money to show for it, they get any extra money taxed off them. Those who never work at all because they were born rich and get all the tax exemptions get bailed out by money that's stolen off the people who work hard and get all their money taken off them by taxation. And the people who are poor who don't work at all also get a little bit of a handout from the people who work really hard and don't have any money. I love economics. You've got to love that Shiite Muslim. All right. Andras Jones is my very special guest. And we're talking about synchronicity. He's from the Sync Book Press. And what I've found very complimentary, I think, is that, well, actually, I was going to say something good, but here's something that's bad. I don't have the ability. I need a soundboard, right? Something that I can, you know, bring a feed up, bring a feed down, plug in songs, play them on the radio and things like that. Because it would be cool to be able to do that. What you were planning to do here was like maybe even have some callers in, have them ask a question, and then randomly pick out a song.
Yeah, bring the radio call in as a little segment. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be really cool if I had the technology. And that's the real problem as well. But I can tell everybody here that every single thing that I've got in terms of tech for the show has been bought for me by the listenership. So this show in its format in every single way in every single day is supported and made possible by you, the listener. So if you're capable of giving some of your hard-earned cash to make sure that this show not only keeps going, but keeps growing, because it's all very well to keep plodding along and plateauing, but the ultimate goal here is growth, because the listeners to the show in general are a lot like me. They've got good senses of humour, they're fairly intelligent, and they're really kind-hearted, decent, caring people who are very generous, either with their time or whatever they happen to have spare. So go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, subscribe for a couple of dollars a month. It can be between $1 and $100 a month, doesn't matter. We'll give you commercial-free archives of this show, which save you about a half an hour of listening time per episode. And I think that's worth something. I do put a lot of extra effort in order to make those extra archives available. And if you want those ad-free archives without paying for them, you can. All right, the links are there. It's not that difficult to find them if you're a bit of a smart cookie. Right, now back to my very special guest, Andras Jones. And I was just wondering.
Well, I got to correct you though. It's actually just for your benefit. It's actually Andras.
Andras Jones.
I was told that ah is one of the more relaxing vowel tones. So with my name, you get to relax twice. So when people are just saying Andras Jones, I feel like they miss the opportunity to say Andras Jones and relax. Andras. You can almost fall asleep. By the time you get to the end of Jones, you're just like cutting my hands.
Yeah. Just like turn into a yawn and add Jones on the Jones.
Yeah, Andras Jones. Yes, yeah, that's me. Yeah. That's me. Phonetics with Andras. I wanted to talk about what I was showing in the break. I think I don't know if people were able to watch it, but one of the projects that I've been doing that I got inspired to do once I hooked up with the folks at Sync Book Press, one of the obsessions of synchronicity sleuths is what they call sync-ups. And the most famous of these is The Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon. Every stoner, you know, knows the story, whether they've done it or not, that if you play Dark Side of the Moon with The Wizard of Oz, there's all these crazy synchronicities that happen. But then artists like David Plate started doing that with other albums and other films. That it sort of works because of the way synchronicity works. It always works. Whenever you put any images with any music, there'll be some things that are like, whoa, that's cool. But then there are some sync-ups that are so phenomenally cool on every level that it just blows your mind and you're sitting there with chills the whole time and you think differently about the record after and you think differently about the movie. One that David Plate came up with, which even as I'm thinking of saying it, I'm getting chills, is Rosemary's White Album, which is you take Rosemary's Baby and the White Album and you play the White Album over Rosemary's Baby. The sync ups are more terrifying than either that record or that movie could be. For instance, the opening shot of the film comes in on the Dakota and settles on the spot where John Lennon died. And then it goes into playing the song Dear Prudence, which was written by John Lennon to Mia Farrow's sister when they were visiting the Maharishi after the filming of Rosemary's Baby, because Rosemary's Baby came out and then the Beatles came out with the White Album like 6 months later. And then 6 months after that, that album supposedly inspired Charles Manson to kill Roman Polanski's pregnant wife, Sharon Tate. And then to add even more, you know, sort of bloody mother issues, Yoko Ono suffers a miscarriage the day before the White Album comes out. And all of this is percolating around this movie about motherhood, the paranoia of motherhood that takes place in the Dakota where John and Yoko lived and where John eventually died. So when you play this music over this with that overlay of all that history, it's like the scariest time machine ever, you know, and it makes that album just explode in a new way, very present for anyone who's watching it. So that's like an example of one of the, what I think is a great one. And the other thing that's great about this is that anyone can do it. Anyone can grab an AVI of a film, take the sound out, use Windows Movie Maker, put an album under it and play with it. I started playing with this because I was working as a bartender in a bar where we had a screen and I wanted to show some of these. The nights we showed Rosemary's White Album were some pretty weird nights in that bar. And the one, what I was just showing, the video I was showing was The Matrix, and my contribution to this, this field of art is this, The Lifehouse Matrix, which is the movie The Matrix with the album The Lifehouse, The Who's Lifehouse, which was people who are fans of The Who, their sort of biggest record, Who's Next, was originally going to be a Tommy-style rock opera, but it eventually got pruned, and then songs from it ended up on later records, and Townsend, you know, played around with it for years. But what's interesting about it is that the story was the story of a sort of a dystopian future where environmental degradation had got so bad that everyone was plugged into experience suits, and that was how they experienced the world. And then there was this rock band that had this concert that plugged everyone into it, and they hit this universal note, and then everyone was set free, sort of the utopian ideals of the 60s. But not far off from the story of The Matrix, in the sense of it's sort of like a Christ allegory over the dystopian future that we are living into. And when you run the music together with the film, it's incredible. And people can, I've managed to put this up on YouTube without it getting the kibosh, and people can go look at it. If they go look up Lifehouse Matrix, I'll send you a link. You can put it in the podcast links as well. But if you look up Lifehouse Matrix, and if you find my YouTube channel, there's a playlist there and you can watch it all contiguous, or you can create it yourself. But the reason I was able to do it, because I've been a huge Who fan since I was a teenager, and I've been collecting a lot of the bootlegs that had this stuff. Then I went to Wikipedia and I found what was the official list, and I created that official list, and then I let it play with Lifehouse. And it is freaky, I mean, in terms of how they connect. And so part of the game of this sync-ups is finding those films that really connect. Like, I had this idea to do Thelma and Louise with Fleetwood Mac. Didn't really work. I mean, it worked in some ways, and it could work, but it didn't. It wasn't like Rosemary's White Album. It wasn't like Lifehouse Matrix. And I've stumbled on a few others. I don't want to like go into them all now, But have you ever played around with this at all or encountered this this art form?
Haven't necessarily played round a bit, but there've been many times as a younger student where we'll all be around wasted, and the stereo will be on, and the TV will be on at the same time, and the music and what's happening on the TV seem to be almost perfectly in sync, and there'll be a couple of us sitting around there buzzing out around it, just going whoa.
Yeah,
that's as far as it went.
That's the nature of sync, is that it always, you put images and music together and it always happens. And, you know, it's funny because that's the way supposedly John Lennon wrote, that John Lennon would write music while having the TV on all the time. And so a lot of, he'd say that like the song Good Morning from Sgt. Pepper's was supposedly inspired by a TV commercial for some cereal. So they were, you know, they were using synchronicity in their writing, which is again one of the reasons that I think something about that time, like sort of, well, Lifehouse comes out of the late '60s, White Album does too. Maybe that's just my own obsessions, because David Plait has done some really interesting work with Marilyn Manson and with Lady Gaga and different films, and people can check out his site as well, which I. If you listen to the latest episode of Synchronize, he does a nice piece on Lifehouse Matrix, and we include all of his links there. And I included the links to Synchronize in the stuff I sent you, Vinny, so you can make that available to the people. But yeah, it's fun. It is stoner work. It's very fun stoner work. But what's fun about it is that there is a community of people out there who really do kind of appreciate and obsess about it. And it's a wonderful little cul-de-sac in the world of, I don't know, cinematic geekery.
Well, I've also got this feeling that somehow music makes things better in films. Like, you can look at one scene, let's say it's in the Matrix. You know that foyer scene where they have that big shootout and stuff like that, and there's the really cool dance music, Spy Break by Propellerheads. And you can just try and think about it. What would that scene be like if it didn't have that music? You know, and it would just be a bunch of guys flying around, shooting each other and stuff like that. And it's just like, yeah, well, that's a pretty good action scene. You put the music into it, though, and you see how it all goes in time. And it really it's actually becomes an iconic scene, something that blows your entire mind. And I think that this is what cinema has been. I don't know. Maybe missing to a large degree is syncing the music with the action sequences or even emotional scenes and things like that. Some musicians are really, really good at it. I think what's his name? There's a composer, Thomas Newman, who did the sound for American Beauty, Finding Nemo, The Shawshank Redemption, The Green Mile, and things like that. Whenever I see a film that has a Thomas Newman soundtrack, I know that it's going to be good. Even if the movie itself is relatively average, I know that the music will enhance whatever's there.
Right. Yeah. I feel I'm a big fan of John Bryan's work. As a film composer, but I mean that's the whole thing. I mean, great, you know, it is a particular skill. There's the skill of the composer who can sync with film, and then there's the skill of, say, the directors or the music supervisors who are able to find those awesome tracks that, you know, I mean, that's the way that Kubrick did a lot of, you know, used a lot of his or did a lot of his early sort of audacious stuff with sound and film. Or, you know, a film like The Graduate that is, you know, that the music is so, you know, that was sort of groundbreaking in terms of sort of, blowing up Simon and Garfunkel as a super group that was sort of like an interesting little pop phenomenon before. And it was the power of film. It's what I was talking about before. I mean, there is a tremendous... I mean, there ought to be. The film is like the most, probably the most comprehensive and the most expensive medium that has been, at least up till now. And still, it's expensive to close down a street and do a car chase, you know, even if nothing explodes. That just doing that, just driving a car down a street and filming it is an expensive proposition. even if you're using a cheap camera, for all the people that you need. And if you want to put a movie star in that car, well, then it's exponentially bigger. So it's an expensive medium, and it's as power, you know, for all the energy that goes into it, all of the talents, all of the energies that go into creating film, it's an incredibly powerful medium. And then, like you say, when you add music to it, which has always probably since before we were walking upright was to some degree of, you know, a really powerful thing to us.
You know, imagine back in the day before capturing dialogue was even possible, when they were doing silent films where they actually had a dude with a piano in the theater playing the music to the right. film in order to get it to sync with people, you know?
Yep. Those were the early days of sync ups.
Way back in the day, man.
Oh, it's great.
I don't know about you, but I just love the phrase "back in the day."
Back in the day, why is that?
Because I think it's just so cool.
Yeah,
you know, like back in the day, we didn't have to do this. Back in the day, we had to work. I remember like my grandparents telling me stories. You know, back in the day, we had to ride 40 miles on a bicycle to get to school every morning. And yeah,
no, I definitely was talking with a friend. Like, I do remember I was talking with her. It's like feeling like I'm just about like the last age that didn't have computers. Like the computers were just coming into school when I was like a senior in high school. And so, but I come from a family where my grandfather worked at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology at MIT. My mom was in the computer engineering department there. So I always sort of had an awareness of computers as this weird thing that my weird relatives tinkered on. And didn't even seem that cool, honestly. And then, but to be right on the edge of that explosion, which is allowing this kind of a show.
Yeah. Right. And speaking of which, the computers have the advertisements programmed in, and you're about to experience these, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after the
more Lifehouse Matrix
at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
Bonkers.
I wake up every day is a daydream. Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. I know I care about insects and violence, and every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back. Oh, yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live from New Zealand 5 days a week. There are 9 AM FM affiliates in New Zealand that currently pick up the show. Infinity FM Network, Rush FM Network, and Dagsy FM up in Whangarei. So you can listen to this on the radio dials in certain parts of the country. You know what really ticks me off, though, ladies and gentlemen? There still has not been a single radio broadcaster in Auckland, low power FM or otherwise, who has the guts to play this show. Don't you find that really annoying? You know, this is where I am, this is where I'm broadcasting from, and the only people who really got the guts to do it are people who ain't anywhere near me.
A prophet is never appreciated in his hometown.
Yeah, it's about right, isn't it? You know, but
tell it to James Joyce.
I do love this city, but the fact of the matter is, there's awful lots of people here, right? It's the biggest city in the country, bro. And yet I don't see a whole lot of choice out there in terms of things to listen to or things to do along this vein of thing. I mean, I just wanted to give a quick plug as well to another Aucklander who's a good friend of mine, Jonathan Eisen, and his wife, Catherine Smith, who do these magazines, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, and Uncensored. The new issues are out now, so you can get those in selected stockists, as well as order copies at uncensored.co.nz and naturalmedicine.net.nz. And there's incredible articles and correlations on there. The most recent one is talking about all of the inside jobs, okay? You know, from 9/11, Oklahoma City, the alleged Batman shooting, and Sandy Hook, and all of these other things. And putting them all together and showing the evidence. Now, moving on from that, this feeling I get about, you know, the world is just like, it's a terrible place. You know, it's really unfair. It's really nasty. But at the same time, I try to avoid all of those nasty people. And it's something Thomas Sheridan told me about psychopaths, is that if you find out that somebody's a psychopath or a lying, cheating piece of trash, don't go out after the psycho, because you can't out-psychopath a psychopath, can you? You know, if you're going to try and bring him to justice or anything like that, all you're going to wind up doing is having your life destroyed by this piece of trash. So what you do then is you make a priority list. Okay, what's my priority? Cool people, nice people, decent people. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're surrounded by the cool, nice, and decent people who you can actually learn something off, who would actually help you when you're down rather than kick you while you're down. Anybody else got a problem with that? I don't. You know, I don't have time for douchebags, really.
I know, but you know what? This is one of those things where if you've unless you came into this world with really good boundaries, this is the thing I've been thinking about, is because I've been going through, I've gone through this process in the last, you know, since I wrote my book in the year or two leading up to writing my book, of really doing that, of drawing these lines and saying, this, you know, this is what I want in my life and this is what I won't tolerate in my life. And I realized that up until that point, I had set really weird, not very good for myself boundaries, and having to retrain friends and loved ones and neighbors and, you know, the world to honor, and yourself to honor and only accept certain boundaries is a, you know, I guess the longer you take to do it, the longer a process it is. And I've been actually just starting to feel the benefits of some of the people, because ultimately I think everyone actually appreciates good boundaries. I like to know, like, if there's someone whose boundaries are here, I like to know it, you know, because, you know, if you and me were, you know, if there was some place in this show where you were like, you're talking too much, dude, or whatever, you know, that's a good boundary. Or you're talking too loud. That's a good boundary, because otherwise I end up sounding too loud and talking too much, and then being, you know, thinking I'm the perpetrator of scumbaggery after the fact, you know. And I think I say good fences make good neighbors. I'm not sure I entirely agree with that, but I do agree that, you know, knowing what, you know, what you'll put up with and what you won't put up with is key.
Somebody asked me what a good friend is, and I said a good friend is somebody who, when you're really feeling down, they'll bring you back up, and when you're getting too far ahead of yourself, they bring you right down again.
You know, for me, a friend is someone who stands by you when everyone else isn't, you know, or when it feels, you know, someone who knows how to get inside when you're, you know, when it feels like they're, you know, the world's turning on you, you know. So, and those people are precious, and then often few in number, learning how to still love and forgive the people who didn't, while also recognizing that you can only count on them so far, is one of those keys to graceful living, right? Yeah. That is not an easy one to learn for, you know, the prideful among us, but necessary. You're totally necessary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's about quality over quantity, you know. I mean, just like, I remember back in high school, I'm not sure if you had a similar experience to me, but I was hanging out with lots and lots of different people all the time, and these people weren't my friends, though. They were just acquaintances. And I'm not friends to this day with a single fracking one of them. And because, well, basically, here's your choice. You're either alone, totally by yourself, or you're hanging out with people who aren't really your friends. You know, I'd rather just hang out with people who aren't really my friends rather than be totally alone and miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other option is, once you get out of that, once you get out of high school, because frack, mate, I mean, if there is a complete example which everybody can get on board with of trauma-based mind control, public schooling.
Oh, yeah.
Once you get out of there, then you start to realize, oh, my God, I'm an adult and I can actually choose who I hang with and what I do. And suddenly, all of these other people that don't really value you, and you realize, oh, my God, I don't really value them either. You start to think about this a little bit better and try to look for those who are quality. I mean, when I pick out mates, bro, I try to look for somebody who's better than me at something. All my mates are better than me at something. And that's why they're my mates. If they were worse at me than at everything, they wouldn't be my friend. Because I'd have nothing
to do with it. Is there anyone in the world who's worse at you than everything?
I don't know.
I mean, there are so many things that I'm bad at that I don't even care about. You know, like, you could be really great at, like, you know, some horrific stuff that I don't even want to know about, you know, or like, I have a friend who's a doctor. He's also a musician. He's one of the most interesting guys I know. But when he starts talking about the thing that he has the most intelligence about, because it's so off the charts for me, I'm kind of when he's talking about ratios in terms of anesthesia, that is out of his expertise. I'm like, I can tell that it's brilliant, but that's all he talked about. If you weren't a musician and an otherwise cool guy, there would be no foundation for friendship, even though he's way better at anesthetizing somebody than I am. I don't know. There are some people who've seen some of my live shows that might disagree, but you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and another thing, I never keep any of my thoughts or my recollections or my observations set in stone, you know? Like, I'll say, oh, my friends had to be better than me or something, but, you know, it's just not necessarily true. And I can adjust and change that as time goes on. And that's another thing that I really don't like about particular people, is when not only will they never admit that they're wrong, but they're not even prepared to entertain any possibility that they might be wrong about something. That just drives me nuts. You know, it's like, you know everything already. Oh, goodness. How old are you? Oh, I'm 32. Man, you're 32 years and you learned everything in the entire freaking universe and you could never be wrong about anything else. How brilliant.
Yeah. Although, I have to say, my tolerance for that, since I became a bartender, my tolerance for that has necessarily had to rise. You know, everyone on the other side of the bar thinks they know everything. And that's, you know, that's
when you're dealing with drunk people, your tolerance for everything has to rise. I mean, your tolerance to being punched in the face for no reason has to rise.
Luckily, I haven't, you know, actually, that's actually a chapter from my book. I got punched by a very tall model, a woman, very tall, and she clocked me really hard and in a way that told me that she was not averse to a world in which people got punched in the face, which was really, I don't know.
I once pulled security at Subway, bro, and I got beaten up by two girls and their boyfriends at the same time.
That sucks. Ganging up on anyone. I just think the whole gang up factor, it's one of the, you know, sort of themes that runs through what happened to me at Chaos, and it's, you know, and a lot of the work that I, you know, just a lot of, I just like the whole bullying, ganging up thing. It's the thing that makes me the angry. Like, when I see it played out in movies or something like that, it's the thing that gets me the angriest.
it makes me look at human beings like pack animals, you know, like they're all ripping up on you, rip shreds out of you like a pack of wolves trying to satisfy their hungry bellies. It's disgusting.
Hey, you know what? I want to do something. So I started, I'm trying to change the subject a little bit here. I started the Lifehouse Matrix when we started this episode. So we're about a minute, an hour and 32 minutes into it. And you were talking about the music that plays during that scene. And I want to show you how the Lifehouse Matrix plays out with that. So it's totally different. Now, this is the Who's music underneath this. And people who are watching this can see this.
Are you able to turn the sound up on it? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to turn the sound up right now.
How's it going?
So we're going to come up on that scene in a second. And so in this we have the agent asking who he is, interrogating him.
Well, he's explaining how the Matrix is supposed to originally be the perfect human world and how it really works and that kind of thing, eh? And they're trying to rescue him.
It's great that this film is so iconic that without the sound at all, you were just looking at that one scene, you knew exactly what's going on. It's one of the
I've
things
seen it a number of times. Yeah. Well, see, the bit with the fight scene is a while away from this, man. This is just like a couple of minutes so far. And also, just bear in mind, we've got the listening radio audience here who can't see what we're seeing just yet. I mean, this will be on the YouTube channel afterwards. And it's the scene where basically Neo remembers what the Oracle told him about that he would have to make a choice about whether or not Morpheus lives or dies. And I think what's interesting is that you think about this. Just from like a protester or activist type of thing is that people actually really do have a choice about whether or not other people live or die in a lot of cases. You know, what are you willing to fight for? What are you willing, more importantly, to sacrifice yourself for? Is it somebody who you believe in or is it something that you believe in? What is it about about sacrifice essentially, that makes you a better person, knowing that there is something better than yourself out there that you're quite willing to just say, hey, look, you know, my life is insignificant by comparison, and I'm willing to lay it on the line to save somebody's life or to prevent something really bad from happening. And it occurs to me there was this... The logic dictates, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And it's a collectivist mentality, isn't it? If you are the one deciding to sacrifice somebody else for the needs of the many, that's collectivism. But if you decide that you're going to give up yourself in order for the needs of the many, I think that there's nothing particularly wrong with that, right? But it just depends because so many people don't really care, I don't think, like enough about others or about a particular topic in order to sacrifice their time getting into it. Now, unfortunately, we're coming to break now, Andras, and we'll be right back.
Okay, well, I'm just going to keep running it real time here. And I love listening to you talk about it. What, if people can watch it on the video, that's great. I hope you were able to hear the music. That was a really great sync take on what Lifehouse Matrix is about. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, just pop that back on there, and we'll keep recording the video side of it, and we'll pop that up on the YouTube for people, and we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You listen to American Freedom Radio. Welcome back, ladies ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. If you want to just continue with that that video there, because we've just come up to the fight scene in the lobby that we were talking about. I'm not sure exactly how this will work out for the audience, though.
We're watching this project called The Lifehouse Matrix, which is a merging of the music from The Who's Lifehouse with the film The Matrix. And earlier in the show, Vinny was talking about how the scene where Neo and Trinity burst into the building where they're holding Morpheus and they do that big gunfight where they're climbing the walls and everything, how important the music was to that. Well, the whole thing about syncing up music, new music with films and of syncups, is of connecting music and film in a way that recontextualizes the whole thing. So we're just reaching the point coming out of The Who's Joined Together into Won't Get Fooled Again, which is the beginning of that scene. So let's just go to it right now. And this is on
can't
the video.
Can't hear it, man.
It's...
Oh, wow, that's awesome sync.
Do you want to describe what you're seeing so the audience can hear?
Well, if I describe what I'm seeing, it talks over the music. So, basically, ladies and gentlemen, this is the very scene when they're running through the lobby building, and a whole bunch of bullets are flying, and they're running up the walls, and there's pieces of frickin' dust and particles and stuff going everywhere. They're loading weapons, cocking them, shooting them, so on and so forth. Really, it's all over the place. What I find very interesting is that it seems like when they fire a bullet, that's when a guitar strum will happen, or when they move up the wall, that's when a few drum beats will happen, and so on and so forth. It's really sunk up quite significantly. I'm really impressed with that.
What I think is interesting, they're saying they won't get fooled again, and this is the point when they're saying, when it's the beginning of Neo not being fooled.
Not thinking that the agents can get him, you know.
Right.
So if we switch off that now and go back to this, we've only got about maybe 5-6 minutes left in the interview, roughly.
Well, I encourage people, if you go to the Lifehouse Matrix and look up Lifehouse Matrix Won't Get Fooled Again, you can go to that scene. I really encourage people to go to Lifehouse Matrix and start at the beginning. The beginning is Bob O'Reilly, and the opening of that movie with the song Bob O'Reilly is so... It's so good. This is how it sounds weird, but it's so good that you can't help but think of 9/11. Like, the... this is the weird thing about synchronicity and conspiracy, and maybe this is a good place to end it. One of the things that I know about Radio 8 Ball is that when it works out perfectly, everyone thinks you faked it. Like, So if you asked a question on Radio 8 Ball and you said, you know, the most random, obscure question, like, is my girlfriend Emily going to bring me the cake that I love? And then you got a song called Emily's Cake by Emily's Cake. Everyone would think that it's so perfect that everyone would think that I faked it. But I know that those moments occur all the time. I also know from what we were talking about earlier that people, even at the smallest level, can be guilty of incredible scumbaggery and conspiracies to protect even the tiniest little bit of power, and that conspiracy is the nature of most human organization. So it's one of those weird things where synchronicity and conspiracy align, that when a synchronicity is so good, it looks like a conspiracy. And that's the thing about these sync ups with these movies. And it's like, that's why I say the beginning of The Matrix, Bob O'Reilly with The Matrix, I watch it and I feel like I'm watching the images from 9-1-1, where either this is the most magical alignment of fuck uppery ever, or it's clearly,
FCC regulations, man, and we can't beep those out. So sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for that, and I apologize to the fillets as well. Anyway, continue. We're running out of time.
Sorry about that. It's been a long time since I've been on terrestrial radio.
He's been on extraterrestrial radio all these years, but yeah.
So all I'm saying is that in a world where, like, so that when I watch this, when I see things like crazy syncs between media like this, it makes me think of the images of these things that look like they have to be conspiracies, but I have to, being an open-minded person, keep in mind the possibility, knowing how synchronicity works, that any one of these things that are like the events could be an alignment of magical proportions. The screwing of people out of their work by different organizations in meticulous ways, that's a different thing. That's a different kind of conspiracy. And those are the ones that are really the most dangerous. I mean, more dangerous than the events that are designed to enslave our minds. Well, I guess more dangerous in some ways and less dangerous in others. You got to watch this, man. Neo's about to save Morpheus.
So this is the bit where he's in the chopper shooting with the minigun.
Yeah.
Like, anybody remembers this iconic scene? You see the shreds of water as each bullet hits the water, and it comes up sort of like in a wave. And as the music goes, all of these bullets just kind of shoot with the waves and get the water up like that. That's really cool.
And Morpheus is about to wake up and pull off his chains.
Here we are, stretching the chains. Screaming, roaring, and pulls the chains off. Making a run for it as the agent hits the room. And they're jumping, and he catches them in midair. And we're pulling the helicopter away from the building.
And Trinity flies away.
And they get shot down. All right.
And then it goes into the song is over.
Yeah.
And so the movie continues, and the music continues. Which makes it very interesting to me that The Who chose not to have that be the last song in Lifehouse, because it makes it sync even better with the movie.
Yeah. Well, and see, there's no way that they could have possibly known how well their music, like, made so many years ago would sync up with The Matrix, could they?
Right.
And this is, like, the essence of synchronicity, like, something that it couldn't possibly be planned, couldn't possibly have any connection to it. And I doubt, right. And the filmmakers, I guarantee you, never even thought about The Who as part of the soundtrack and so on and so forth. And yet, there it is, just fits like Legos.
Right. It's one of those beautiful things. It's like, what I think of it is it's the way that nature expresses itself in our consciousness, is that the natural consciousness is purely synchronistic and sees those patterns and feels that sense of connection everywhere. And we aren't natural. And yet the most unnatural things, the making of movies and of like this electronic music and all this stuff that ends up being an expression of human ego chasing after power. But when you get far enough away from it and recontextualize it, it's still an expression that would look as beautiful and perfect as any Tibetan mandala or a flower blooming. And that's, you know, it's one of those, it's the crazy thing about the search for truth, because it's incredibly complex and full of darkness and horror, and also from another context it's as beautiful as, you know, looking down on the planet Earth from the moon, right?
Yeah. All right, well, we've come to the end of the show. Andras Jones. And from Radio 8Ball .com. It's been a pleasure, and it's been a lot of fun. Thanks very much for your time.
Yes, Vinny. Thanks a lot for having me on the show. And before I go, I just really do want to encourage people, please do support my Indiegogo campaign. There's only 2 weeks left in it. I know you got to go. Radio8ball.com. Please come and support it. Synchronicity is great, and I'm keeping it alive in every way I can.
All right. Andras Jones, ladies and gentlemen, Radio8ball.com.